America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Well, that is the question. Golic and Wingo
ESPN
with you.
Radio ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Hope your Thursday is off to a good start. And we have a lot to get to today. We may have baseball.
We might have baseball. We've got a bunch of really potentially old, mad NBA head coaches.
Boy, we really do.
The NFL is talking about Kaepernick again. It feels like we're back in 2016.
We are stuck in a time warp, ladies and
gentlemen. Boy, we really are.
But the conversation is completely different, though.
The conversation is very different. And knowing we're coming into the show, like, we sit around and do these pre-show meetings before, and we talk on the show note all night, and you see all these things. We go, all right, Major League Baseball is going to be a pretty big one. It seems like we could have maybe worked ourselves back into the deal zone here with a couple of major caveats, hopefully. We have some things that, you're right, are very different from the last time with Colin Kaepernick. But this damn face app challenge, now all of a sudden we wait till 6 o'clock on the dot, and God bless Ali, our producer, who tweeted this out. You guys saw that face app thing going around yesterday, right?
Yes, I did not.
Yeah. You didn't see, you missed that on the interwebs yesterday?
Sometimes I turn off the machines.
They basically took all of it started with the SEC football head coaches.
It
went through and it put hair on them and put them through the face app and made them look like girls. And they tweeted out ours at Golic and Wingo, pictures of all of us. And I'm not going to lie, Lady Golic Jr. just showed up to your CrossFit class and she is turning heads right now. I look wonderful.
I don't.
Oh my God. I am amazed by how I did not expect to be a good looking lady. I didn't expect it, but wow. Am I into me? I think I'm into me.
I am so thrown at the turn this has taken.
I want to have the conversation about Kaepernick, and I want to talk about where Cam Newton might end up.
Do
in free
you?
Agency,
it doesn't think you
but
do.
I didn't expect to be attracted to myself this morning. I don't know what happened.
It doesn't look like
okay,
maybe
can I
why
just
it's
say
good looking because it doesn't look like your face
this?
At all.
I'm cute. I am a killer.
Trey, I was going to say, you're pretty cute.
I am a killer.
I'm not.
No.
I'm not.
Mike, you,
at all.
Mike, you look like a human pug.
Yeah, I'm not. Mike, that face doesn't even look like you.
Oh,
though.
No, it does.
No, not one bit.
Oh, man.
That's why it's cute.
I've seen my future.
I'm not going to say I'm a looking and I'm a liking.
The thing about you though is the arm head ratio.
I said, I'm in your CrossFit class. I am pacing the group right now.
Wow. Yeah, I'm the clubhouse leader.
Oh man.
I mean, very delicate features.
At Golic and Wingo, which one of us? I feel like it's me.
I think that's a huge win.
I think it's between the two of you. I'm going back to the I'm going back to the buffet.
Yeah.
This is literally terrifying.
Yeah, I can't even look at it. I'm averting my eyes.
It's not great. The radio audience is loving this, by the way.
Yeah, so check it out at Golic and Wingo. The three of us look like women.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Anyway, it is the appropriate distraction in these uncertain times. But
is it time for serious talk now?
Yeah, now it's time for serious talk.
But not straight talk.
No.
It's not time for straight talk because that is the farthest thing from straight talk. But we'll get to some serious talk about whether Colin Kaepernick is going to be signed, right? So Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn was asked about it. And he said, I thought what he said was very interesting on a bunch of levels, because I'm not sure what he said. So let's listen to someone asking Anthony Lynn, the Chargers head coach, on a Zoom call about whether or not he's considered bringing Colin Kaepernick in.
That's something that's probably on the workout list. You know, I haven't spoken with Colin. I'm not sure if you know where he's at as far as in his career, what he want to do. But Colin definitely fits the style of quarterback for the system that we're going to be running. And I'm very confident and happy with the three quarterbacks that I have. But, you know, you can never have too many people waiting on the runway.
By the way, the quarterbacks that he have, obviously first-round pick Justin Herbert.
Right.
Tyrod Taylor and Easton Stick.
Easton Stick.
Carson Wentz Jr.
Right, right.
Carson Wentz, the sequel.
He took over for Carson Wentz when he left. And how about North Dakota State? They got another kid coming out this year.
Yeah. Trey Lance.
Could be the second quarterback taken in the draft if he jumps over Justin Fields in this one. It's quarterback U is what it is.
They do all right there in the Fargo Dome. But it brings up the question, you're right, Trey, because what was really said here? Because he went on to basically say teams would be crazy to not have Colin on their workout list.
But I do like Cap, and he fits. We haven't made plans to work Cap out. I mean, Cap was he was a starting quarterback, a Super Bowl quarterback in this league. I think it would be crazy to not have him on your workout list, unless there's other reasons why you shouldn't. But we haven't reached out. We haven't scheduled anything. Okay. No, we have not.
So, that's my thing. What did he actually say?
And he actually said he fits their system.
Fits their system, but he's not on our workout list.
Not on the list. Well, I mean.
No, he said he is on their workout
list. He is on their workout
list. He's happy with the quarterbacks they have.
Well, and we have to understand the dynamics right now. Do we think Cap's better than a lot of the quarterbacks that are in quarterback rooms now? Yes, but teams are set. Rosters are set at this point. Obviously, it doesn't mean they can't change. I do think, and remember, you can't bring anybody in. Nobody is just going to sign Cap. They're going to bring him in. At least I don't think they are.
No, they're not going to sign him sight unseen.
And we have no idea when they can start bringing players in again to even practice with their team, let alone then have workouts, because that would be the next thing. Remember, the first time these coaches may see their players may be July 28th, the start of training camp. So the way the year is going doesn't help Cap in this situation at all, if he is to get a look. So what I do think is going to happen, I do think some teams will work him out, and that's what you do. Teams work out players, and then they have their list. So if something happens and you lose a player, you go to your list of players you have worked out or players you know, and you bring them aboard. So I do think that is a distinct possibility that he will get workouts from teams. The only problem is we don't know when that can happen. Do I think he'll be signed by training camp to a team? No. And a lot of that has to do, well, there's a lot of legs there, but one of the bigger ones now is, quite honestly, you can't see him.
Yeah.
You can't look at him. You can't work him out. You're basically, everybody is just showing up at camp. So under that right there, I don't think there's any way he's going to be signed to a team by that.
Well, not only that, but there's probably another quarterback out there that's going to get signed before him.
That needs to be seen as well in person. That's Cam Newton. Right.
So, I mean,
I guess that's the thing is now if we're able to make this, and there's, you know, some reason to believe after comments yesterday from the president that this might
we'll get to that in a minute.
That this might be allowed to be a football position in decision in some people's minds. And if it is, then you're right. We got to treat it like a football decision, and we're all putting Collins firmly behind Cam Newton in the conversation of quarterbacks that will be coming off and being signed during the course of training camp. And that's one thing that's become pretty consistent about Cam is the way that we've looked at him and said it's probably, based on the way this offseason shook out, going to take some sort of training camp injury, some sort of situation surrounding poor performance during camp, once you're able to get in front of all your guys, that's going to get Cam signed when they can get a look at him, when they can see that foot in person. And so I wouldn't stand to reason that anything would be any different in Colin for that. It would just happen after whenever it happens for Cam.
And look, there's always one or two quarterbacks that people point out, whether it's with Colin or Cam, said, yeah, but that guy signed. I mean, Joe Flacco is signed. Joe Flacco is signed to a team. He's with the Jets, and he's even said, I won't be ready for week one.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, it's just... So, it's a little weird, right? It's a little weird that Joe Flacco's on a team, and Cam Newton isn't, and then, of course, there's the Colin Kaepernick discussion.
Yeah, I mean, because Flacco coming off a neck injury as well. I have been surprised about Cam not being signed, but... The one thing not surprising is in this, you want to get a look at a guy. He's coming off that injury. You want to see him move. And those, I'm sorry, but those videos he's putting out of him working out is not telling me anything about how his foot is at all.
No, and I think this whole conversation serves to underscore a point that it's never going to be just a football decision with Colin.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's never
right.
going to be just a football decision.
Coming up more on this, including the biggest question when it comes to Colin, will the football people make that decision? We may have gotten some insight on that from a very unusual source yesterday, and we'll get to that after.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. Buster Olney is basically juggling flaming chainsaws with what he's doing right now. He was just on the KBO broadcast doing stuff for them, and then boom, just like that, he shifts gears and joins us now to talk about Major League Baseball. Buster, A, you're a wizard. B, what took us this long for baseball to get here with the pro rata?
The incrementalism on the side of the owners. Which has been stunning, and we talked about that the other day, that when you measure the amounts of money that they're haggling over at this point, it's like one Jason Hayward contract, you know, one Mark Teixeira contract, just to put it into context, weighed against an industry that might be worth $50 billion when you consider the value of the franchises. But I don't think we're necessarily close. Based on the conversations I was, had with folks on the player side last night, their reaction to 60 games at full pay was, wait, there's got to be more, right? There's got to be more to this offer, because the 60-game full pay offer is basically the same amount of money as what they were offered when they were the owners extended 72 games at 83% pay. And so last night, there were folks on the player's side, waiting for the fine print to emerge. And okay, so is there some sort of concession going forward, some sort of mechanism to help free agents? Is there something else we haven't heard? And there isn't. And it'll be interesting to see today what the response is from the Players Association. I don't think that 60 games at full pay is going to get it done, because I think from that side, their feeling is, look, Rob Manfred could implement 54 games at a 54 game season at full pay. Is 60 games at full pay really that different? And they are now flush against the realities, the calendar, and trying to figure this out, because according to the owner's proposal yesterday, the second spring training would begin about June 29th. 3 weeks later, games beginning on July 19th. With 10 off days built into that 60-game season. So, guys, it looks like there's a lot more haggling to be done.
Yeah, I guess that's the thought, Buster, is everybody sees the headline and says, oh, there's movement, there's negotiation. It's kind of like the baseball contract we always talk about. When you see a baseball player's contract, look at the end number because that's what they're getting. In a football contract, look at the guaranteed money because that's what we know they're getting. In this, it almost doesn't even seem like, Buster, it's the games or anything like that. It's the last number. Like you said, this offer, $1.5 billion, just like the last offer the owners had. And for the union, the last offer was in the $2.2, $2.3 billion range. So I guess I'm asking, is that the number we need to ultimately look at for getting games and all that? Is that the final number?
Golic, I think that comparison's absolutely perfect. You're right. It is like looking at an NFL player's contract, and that is, okay, what's the guarantee? How much of that needle are you going to move? And keep in mind, too, that these conversations we're having now, the financial aspect of this is like the Mount Everest. And then after that, there's K2 with health and safety protocols. And I think if there's agreement on the money, that, that'll go relatively smoothly. You obviously, if they get restarted, you're going to have the inherent risk. But they do have a ways to go. I can tell you this on the player side last night too, among some of the agents, and they were looking at Rob Manfred's actions, and they were looking at the wording of his statement that he issued last night, and it was almost like, and Rob is a lawyer, he was checking all the boxes that potentially could undercut a future grievance. Those first words in his statement. At my request, if you were to paraphrase that, I'm trying. We discussed a framework. I'm trying. And some of the agents are wondering, because the big needle that you just referenced with the total financial package really didn't move, if part of this was Rob's trip out to Arizona to undercut any future legal action against, you know, by the players against Major League Baseball if they don't play this year.
Buster Olney with us here on Golic and Wingo. And Buster, materially, we know this is, again, part of the negotiations back at the table, the 60-game offer now on this. But superficially, we know the way it was just positioned. It was the players looking at Rob Manfred and the owner saying, tell us when and where, tell us when we're ready to go, we're ready to play. And this is not them unilaterally imposing that amount. That being said, if the players do come back and ask for more and put up more of a fight and drag this on, are they going to lose a lot of that leverage and goodwill they created with the public?
It was interesting last night that the, you know, the players who've been so vocal on social media were essentially silent. Because I think they were still processing that. I don't think they'll lose the leverage of this moment, you know, because I do think, because of how this has played out, the incrementalism of the owner's offers, the players being accessible to fans on social media, I think they have the support, generally speaking, of fans. But, guys, if there's no baseball, in the end, you know, it would be the players going back out on the field in uniforms in front of the fans. And I think there is a lot of building anger toward both sides that you see on social media, responses I get, people I talk to. And even within the sport, it's amazing when you talk to the rank and file among players, among team staffers. They're disgusted by this. Like, they're embarrassed to be part of this industry right now because of how this is playing out. I had someone on the team side say to me the other day, speaking generally of fans, he was like, they hate us. Like, they hate us right now. And certainly, you know, another round of haggling, another round of not having a resolution can only feed that.
Buster Olney with us, giving us a Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Buster, I texted with one player last night, and he said to me, quote, it feels good to be working again. And I took that as an extremely optimistic situation that he believed this thing would get worked out. I mean, where are you on the optimism scale that this, yes, there are still obstacles to get through, but that we're headed towards, to quote our friend Jeff Passan, the deal zone?
Yeah, I think it just depends on how much more movement there is. I don't think, based on what I was hearing last night, that 60 games is going to get it done. You know, will the number have to be 68? Will the number have to be a 70? But I think among most folks on the player side that I was hearing from last night, it was, we need more. And they're also hoping that there are going to be bigger picture mechanisms put in place to help free agents in the fall to address larger issues for the players before they get an agreement.
So along those lines, Buster, so again, we talk about games, we talk about money. The owners need to come up from their $1.5 billion. The players, are they going to come down for their $2.2 or $2.3 billion? Where will they meet? Is one of the other components here, because this is another part of it that was like an afterthought a little bit on this, but how important is it that the league get from the players, you will not file a grievance against us?
Oh, I think that's going to be one of those must-haves. You know, in the conversation between Tony Clark and Rob Manfred, I think it basically was, okay, what do you need? I'll tell you what I need. It was sort of staking points, and I do think that if, in fact, they play, that would be one of the conditions that the owners would insist upon.
Buster, a couple of other questions specifically about the playoffs. We've talked about in the deal that would be expanded playoffs, not only in 2020, but also in 2021. Should we get there, what are we looking at in terms of postseason baseball?
16 teams, potentially, that's where the final number lands on, and I think that would be especially appropriate for this year to widen the playoff field, given the fact that it would be a shortened season. You could still play it within the current framework that we have, although that first round, how'd you like to be like a number one seed if you're the Yankees, you're the Dodgers? And I'm speculating on this part. I'm assuming that first set of games is going to be like a best of three. So it would be like number one seed against the number eight seed, you know, potentially playing three games in a four-game window before you move on to the next round. That would be something. If, in fact, they can agree to a deal, it would feel like a NASCAR restart, and how accelerated everything would be, and how you know, how big of a deal it would be for a team to lose three straight games or four straight games. It would be unlike anything we've ever seen before, just because the result of each game would be so magnified. Baseball is always, you know, the big picture, long term, stay patient. You couldn't have patience in a shortened season.
No way. And Buster, there's also the other question we have to talk about, which is the reason we're having this, is the pandemic. And I was also told that both sides were very shooken up by the comments from Dr. Fauci the other day, where he said, I wouldn't think about playing a lot of baseball late into October. You want to get this thing done as quickly as you can. How much do you think that is sort of spurring these guys to finally get something on paper so we can get this thing moving and finish it before we're late into October?
100% the realities of the calendar are kicking in. Like, we are now at the point where we're getting close to either you're going to figure it out or there's not going to be baseball this year. And the whole time, Trey, as they've had these conversations with folks in Major League Baseball at the team level, they always add the qualifier, we could figure this all out and the whole thing could derail with a spat of positive tests in a clubhouse. What happens if all of a sudden you have, you know, eight players test positive in one clubhouse? You know, what would happen then? What would happen to that team? What would happen to the team they played against? And I think they're all aware of that possibility, that the whole thing could be pulled off the tracks by the realities of the coronavirus.
So, good news, but then maybe not. Baseball! Buster, as always, we appreciate your time, your insight, and your wisdom. Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
We are delighted to be joined by Oklahoma head football coach Lincoln Riley with us here on Golic and Wingo. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Hey, great, guys. Good morning.
Coach, I guess just to start off, and we were just talking about some of the things that go along with the health and safety protocols that we certainly want to get into with you, but we've seen what's going on the other side of the state with Oklahoma State, with Coach Gundy, and some of the response from his players. We've seen players at Florida State speaking up, at Texas, and in general, the world of college football is seeing their players now really have a voice. What's that been like for you to process as a head coach at one of the biggest college programs in the country?
Well, I think it's a positive thing. I mean, I think players have had a voice. I think some of the things going on in our country right now have even added to that. And so I don't have any issue with it. I mean, I think obviously it's getting a lot of attention right now, and rightfully so. But these players, they deserve a voice. They're a big part of what makes college football so special. We've always believed in giving our players a voice. And so honestly for us, I don't know that it feels that much different. As far as other places across the country, other stories that have come up, that's everybody kind of has their own way of doing things. And so I've been proud of how our players have handled it here and proud that we've had a program that's always given our guys a voice.
Coach, what have is it been like for you guys, obviously in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd and the ensuing protests? What have the conversations been like between you and your players and the things that you guys have discussed?
Yeah, they've been great. You know, they've not that they've all been easy. They haven't. But I think we've been able to kind of rely on our culture, and I think our players have known where we as a staff stand, and I think we've had a pretty good idea of where our players stand, and so this has certainly shed some new light, I think, on this issue for everybody. And once again, been very proud of how our players have handled it. Our guys have been involved in a lot of the peaceful protests across the state. We've had couple of our players that have been more involved on the kind of educating themselves, whether it's the right to vote or different potential policy changes. So we've had a very, very active group, and discussions have been very good, very healthy. I think we've all learned a lot. I know that I certainly have, and still continue to have a lot more to learn on the subject, but it's been something that we've approached together, and that, you know, our entire team, you know, whether it's our black student athletes, whether it's our white student athletes, any other race, any other ethnicity, that, you know, they've really kind of come together, listened to each other, and I think all grown.
Golic and Wingo talking to Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma head coach, head football coach for the Sooners, and obviously the peaceful protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd has been something that everybody has been dealing with. And also the other thing that everybody has been dealing with is the pandemic, COVID-19. And Lincoln, you have been an outlier on a lot of levels on your thought process about when players should return and how they should return. You have said, hey, we need as much time as possible to figure this out. And then we see players coming back to certain schools, whether it's the University of Houston, where they had a bunch of people test positive, some Alabama players tested positive. We've had other people pop up at other schools testing positive. Where are you now on how Oklahoma is going to handle the idea of bringing players in and getting them back on campus and how you're going to begin preparing for the season?
Well, I'm confident in our plan. It has been not from a sense of like I told you so or anything like that. It's been nice to kind of see what's going on at these other schools, have conversations with these people. Our medical personnel have conversations with these people, and so I think we've been able to learn some without our players being at risk. And so that has certainly been helpful. I mean, listen, nobody's immune to this. I mean, we've had a player or two that has been either exposed or has tested positive for this thing, just like everybody else has. The difference for us is our players aren't all here together, so they haven't exposed or potentially infected a bunch of other players here. Now, like we all said, eventually, to make this thing work, we've got to all get them back together. And, you know, our guys are due in town here in about 2 weeks. And so I do feel like we're more educated. Had we brought our guys in June 1st or, you know, even as little as a week ago, there's less that we would have known. So I do feel like we're more educated. Does that mean it's going to be 100%? No. But I do feel like we're more prepared on two fronts. I mean, it's, we obviously made this decision to help prepare for the pandemic and all that's going on, and I do feel like that's going to be a positive. And then also with all that's going on in our country, it's given ourselves as us as a staff time to help prepare in a few certain areas. I don't know that I want to go into a ton of details here, but in a few certain areas to help prepare for all that's gone on with the racial injustice issue across our country. To prepare, make sure that we have the best environment possible when our guys get back to town as well.
Talking to Lincoln Riley, head coach at Oklahoma, and again, Division I Council just approved the 6-week practice plan that will start workouts July 13th. You said your full team will be in a couple of weeks. That would put it at the beginning of July. Just from your years in football and preparing athletes in college, do you feel this, because you haven't had the players there all together, this will be enough time to be properly prepared for that first game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have zero concern about that. I mean, I think everybody's concern is if you have an outbreak or all of a sudden you have a bunch of cases and then you don't have the time that you thought you would. I mean, I think everybody, regardless of when you bring them in, has that concern. And I think any league, any sport's going to have that. But no, I think it's a good plan that the Football Oversight Committee and then Council, put forward. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's going to give us a little bit more access to the players 2 weeks before training camp starts. And these guys are going to be in good shape. That's going to help us. The last 2 weeks is going to help us make up for so many of us basically missing our entire spring practice period. So barring a bunch of major outbreaks, I think it's without a doubt enough time to get our guys ready to play.
Look, those are concerns that every program is dealing with right now, as Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma head football coach, is with us. But there's a concern that specifically you are dealing with, Lincoln, that no other school probably is. And is the question I have for you is, are you preparing Spencer Rattler for his Heisman Trophy weekend? Because we've seen Baker Mayfield, we've seen Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts comes in, he's a finalist. So we do need, you need to be prepared to have Spencer prepared for that weekend going on recent history.
Yeah. It's kind of become the standard. It'll be fun. This is a different year for us quarterback wise. You know, we had you know, had Baker for 3 years and had a great run with him. And then, you know, it's been so many years in a row here that we've had, you know, senior quarterbacks, and, you know, Baker senior year, Kyler's, what became Kyler senior year. And then of course, Jalen senior year. So we're excited for the potential of having a quarterback for multiple years. And both Tanner Mordecai and Spencer Rattler, we think, are tremendous young prospects. If they weren't, we probably would have brought in another transfer. But these guys are, yeah, I mean, these guys are ready to play. They're good enough to play. It's been, honestly, probably a better year that this pandemic happened now as opposed to last year, because these guys, they understand our system. They've been in it. They've taken a lot of reps. So for them, it's just about getting on the field and getting those game reps and getting in the flow of that. But yeah, it's going to be fun to watch these two cats compete, and we feel like we've got some good pieces around them and two really, really talented players that are going to go at it.
I mean, if you're going on names alone, Tanner Rattler, those are Heisman Trophy names. Yeah, I mean, if I had a vote, I'd give them to both of them just on the names alone. So we'll see what happens going forward. Coach, listen, always like to have a little fun with you, but we appreciate your time dealing with a lot of serious topics. We look forward to you and Oklahoma football getting back on the field as soon as you can. And say hello to Joe Castiglione for me, okay?
Will do. Will do. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day.
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's
very interesting where that went.
We're delighted to be joined by the NFL's chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, a neurosurgeon and the founder of the Vanderbilt Sports Concussion Center. Dr. Sills, thank you so much for your time this morning. I guess the overriding first question we have is, how does one play football in a situation where separation is ideal to not contract a virus and not an option?
Well, I think you're exactly right that we all realize that football and physical distancing really don't go together. But obviously the game and the activity in a game is one small part of the overall week experience for NFL players, coaches, and that whole ecosystem of people that are around each other. So there are certainly a lot of things that we can do to take care of each other outside of the game field or the practice field. And there are also some things that we're working on to mitigate risk on the field itself. But I think it illustrates the point that it's a challenge for a sport like ours where physical distancing is just really not possible when we're actually playing the game.
So let's look at some of those things. Again, training camps to all open together July 28th, except for the two teams that start early. They go the 25th. What are some of the we've seen colleges and other places starting to open up. What are some of the testing protocols that you guys have in place?
Well, we're still working on the final details of our protocol, but I think you can expect us to do a very frequent testing protocol that's really centered around the idea of surveillance, which means that we're not looking for people that are symptomatic, that we think we'll catch those on other forms of screening. What we're trying to do with testing is to detect newly infected individuals at the earliest possible state before they have a chance to spread that infection to others within that team environment. So we want to have a chance to isolate them, get them the appropriate treatment, and again, make sure they don't expose everyone else in the environment. So that means that we're going to be testing really, really frequently, and we'll have to base participation around that testing. But this is also important to note, it's not just about players. This is about coaches, about strength and conditioning staff, about medical staff. Anybody that's in that team ecosystem, as we've been calling it, we'll have to test them because they're all going to share that risk together since they'll be around each other on the practice fields and throughout the week. And that extends to the game field as well. Anybody that's again, going to have close exposure there where we can't practice physical distancing.
Dr. Sills, when it comes to that, one of the things that the NBA has been dealing with is the idea that for them a positive test could trigger a 14-day shutdown for a player, a two-week quarantine where they wouldn't be able to work out, and that's caused some concern. Have you guys landed on, if there is a positive test, how long and what would be involved for the player, coach, or personnel member that tested positive?
Well, that's an area that we're still really actively working on together with the NFL Players Association. We've also been in regular contact with the CDC, the White House Task Force, and other public health authorities, because you're right that that's a crucial question for sports leagues to answer, is how do you deal when there is a player who's positive, or coach, or someone who's exposed others. And what we're trying to work towards is something that incorporates a what we would call a test-based strategy rather than simply an arbitrary time period of isolation. The concept that if we're testing really frequently, is it possible to shorten that duration of isolation from the rest of the team environment? So, again, that's an area of a lot of work that's going into, but we're doing it in conjunction with public health authorities who are having to consider those types of situations, not only in professional sports but in other areas as well.
Dr. Alan Sills with us, the NFL Chief Medical Officer, talking about how the NFL is going to plan on playing from a medical perspective with COVID-19 out there. You said you're working on some things to mitigate situations in games. What are some of those things that you guys are looking at? We've heard things about different kinds of helmets and all this kind of stuff. What sort of things are actually being looked at as practical options?
Well, I think there are a number of things you can do on game day. First and foremost, again, is look at the layout of the field. How many people are on the field? How many people are exposed to each other? And can we actually distance some areas of the field and keep people apart? So we think that's important as a first step. We're certainly looking at things about sterilization of equipment and everything, either down to the game balls and how we use that. And then I think you probably have heard in the media some reports that we are looking with a group of engineers very creatively at the possibility of some extended face shield mask type options that might be part of the football helmet, because, again, we think there may be some things that we can do there to mitigate risk from a respiratory standpoint. And then, of course, throughout all of this, you have to continue to emphasize things like good hand hygiene, hand washing, and avoiding touching contaminated surfaces. So we're really looking at the entire game day experience, from who's present to what they do to what they touch and what the sterilization procedures are, and looking at that through the lens of how can we mitigate risk. That's what this is all about, is what can we do to reduce the risk for every single person that's involved in that team environment, both on game day and outside the game day.
NFL's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Alan Sills, joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So players, when they have their meetings, we were discussing this and how it would work, and we keep talking about isolation of a player. So let's just take the quarterback room, for instance. If a player, one of the quarterbacks tests positive, obviously you isolate that player, but they've been exposed to other players in that room. And I know you say you would test them right away to see if they have it, but you tell me, obviously you're the doctor in this. Wouldn't it take a few times or maybe a few days for that to actually show up on the others as well? And if so, wouldn't you need to isolate those to other quarterbacks as well? Or am I off on that?
No, I think, again, Mike, you're talking the right concepts, and that's, as I said, why we're working on the exact details of those protocols. But I would say, for example, within the room, when you talk about a meeting room like a quarterback room or any of the rooms, there you can actually practice physical distancing and use of masks and other PPE to reduce risk for everybody involved. So again, can you convert that exposure from what would be called a close exposure to a more distant exposure? And that's a basic concept with regard to what you do in response. If you're familiar with the guidelines, you know, the CDC and others talk about close exposures, which means you're within 6 feet for an extended period of time. So that's what I'm talking about, how you have to look at things like, how do we conduct our practices? How do we conduct our meetings? How do we lay out our facilities? All those things can be looked at and can be re-engineered in a way that reduces risk and prevents as many close exposures as possible. And so that's the stage we're in with these protocols, is what can we do at every step of our operation to look at it and to think about ways to reduce risk to the people involved. And in doing that, I think one of our athletic trainers really encapsulated it well. He said, you know, it's not going to feel normal because it's not going to be normal. Everything we do is going to be different in some way, whether it's how the building is laid out, how we take our meals, how we travel, how we practice. All of these things, I think, are things that we have to re-engineer and reconstruct, centered around the idea of how do we mitigate risk to everybody that's involved.
Dr. Sills, obviously everyone leaning on the infectious disease community when it comes to our understanding and the way that we go about this. You mentioned all the things that you guys are trying to control on your end. Dr. Anthony Fauci came out and said that Major League Baseball should try and avoid playing games into late October as things get colder and the virus could gear back up. How concerned are you guys when you hear statements like that?
Well, I think obviously, as I mentioned before, that we're in regular contact with the officials at the CDC, the White House Task Force, and also with other professional sports leagues. I speak regularly with the chief medical officers of the NBA, of the NHL, of Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer. We're also communicating regularly with professional sports leagues around the world with what they're learning through this. So we're all in the same boat together. And I think what we have to recognize is that we're going to keep in very close contact with the public health authorities, and we're going to respond to the situation at that time. We're not just going to put our heads down and say, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to ignore all those realities. And I think you've seen that approach throughout. For example, with the NFL draft, we looked at that and said, okay, here's what we'd like to conduct. This is an event we'd like to do. How can we do that and at the same time still respect the current public health policies and adapt to what's being asked of everyone at this time? So we'll take that same approach whether we're in July or October or January. We have to monitor what's going on the pandemic overall. We have to stay in close working relationship with public health authorities. And again, we have to adapt football to the virus, not try to adapt the virus to football. And so that's the challenge, and that's what we're working very collaboratively with the NFL Players Association and with our infectious disease experts and others to try to do.
Dr. Alan Sills with us, NFL Chief Medical Officer, trying to figure out the parameters of how you play football with the pandemic going on. Have you learned anything medically from so many of the NFL players that we know have tested positive? We saw the center for the Rams, Von Miller, who is asthmatic, by the way, and has some issues that would lead to him having problems with COVID, got COVID and recovered. We know about Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Jackson, the Denver Broncos safety is now tested positive. Are there things that you have learned about the virus through some of these high-profile NFL players testing positive that has given you some information that makes you feel better about it one way or the other?
Well, of course, first of all, we hate to see anybody who's diagnosed with the virus, of course. And our club medical staffs are making sure that all those individuals get the appropriate treatment and they're taking all the right steps, and including contact tracing and communication with the public health officials. With that being said, it doesn't come as a surprise to us that there are new positive cases. I think this isn't the first wave of positive cases, and it probably won't be the last. And I think that just reflects the fact that this virus is still prevalent in our society. So as long as it's endemic in our society, we will have some new positive cases. And that's independent of how good our protocols are or how careful everyone is. So I think what we've learned is, again, it's all about how we respond. We want to identify those cases as quickly as possible, prevent spread, and make sure that everyone that's in that player ecosystem, whether it's other players, coaches, medical staff, the club personnel, player families, we want to make sure we're taking all the appropriate measures to decrease their risk. So once our players are back in our facilities, we'll have a very robust and active testing program so that we can, again, identify those new cases as quickly as we can.
The NFL's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Alan Sills, joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So a job I don't envy is what you guys are trying to do here, and you're trying to look at every scenario, and you have to have parameters. And one of those parameters, I'm sure, is worst-case scenario. You know, we've seen in college at Houston, they had, six players, all symptomatic, test positive, and they shut down the voluntary workout program. In your mind, is there a number on a team of players that if they test positive, players or staff on a team, that we can't be isolating because there's just too many that have it? Is there a number in your mind that says, guys, we have to shut this team down or shut down what we're doing until we get squared away?
Mike, I think it's hard to declare an exact number. I think it depends on a lot of factors of how the spread is going, what's happening in that community, and what the timeline is. But let me say this. We all recognize that that's a possibility. And as I mentioned before, we have to stay in close contact with public health officials, with the CDC and others, to make the best medical decisions that we can. And I think the two key words here is flexibility and adaptability. We'll have to remain flexible. We'll have to adapt to the situation, whatever it may be. And we've said that throughout. And I think the same is true with our protocols. Whatever those protocols are that we start with in July, they will evolve and they will change based upon new knowledge, based upon what's happening with the pandemic. But we'll stay in very close contact with those public health officials, and we'll make the best and the safest decision for everybody that's involved, whether, again, that's players, fans, coaches, everybody in that ecosystem. We've been very clear that the NFL is trying to do the most thoughtful thing that we can and to be measured and scientifically driven in everything that we do.
Dr. Sills, we've all mentioned that the NFL, college football, the fall sports have had a long runway with this. As you mentioned, you've had the opportunity to look to and learn from a lot of the other sports leagues. And so I'm curious, with all the time that you guys have had to gather this information from the start of the pandemic, when everyone first started reacting to this, to now, what's the one thing you think has been most beneficial to you guys that you've learned either just through that time period or from the other leagues about how you're going to proceed with this so far?
I think we've learned that this is really hard. It's not easy to do at all. There are a lot of moving parts to this, and it takes tremendous collaboration from everyone involved. And I think one of the key features, we talked about everyone in that team ecosystem sharing risk. It also is about sharing responsibility, because no matter how good a job we do at the facility, we can do physical distancing, we can do great hygiene around the facility. It's also about what everyone does away from the facility. And again, this isn't just players. This is coaches and other staff. Everyone has to be really conscious and do all the proper behaviors to mitigate risk away from the football field as well as when they're at the facility. And that has to be consistent. That has to be day after day after day. Again, as long as the virus is endemic in the community. So that's a hard task to do, particularly over a 6-month season. But I think it points back to the need for continued education and just relying upon each other. This is really very much like football in the sense that teamwork and responsibility of the team is going to matter here. Every single person is going to have to play a role, meaning that every day they're going to have to take all the measures possible to mitigate risk. And yet we still will probably have some cases that we'll have to rely upon detecting early and isolating away. So that's what I'd say we've learned from talking to other leagues around the world. This isn't easy, but I'm very optimistic. We've got a lot of very smart, talented, creative people working on it. And I think there's tremendous commitment on behalf of all the stakeholders, including our partnership with the NFL Players Association, to work together and try to do this in the safest possible manner.
Dr. Sills, it's a tough task, and we'll see how it plays out, but we appreciate your time and your insights on how the NFL is preparing to play the upcoming season in the midst of the pandemic. Thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day.
Yeah. Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
A former two-time All-Star and NBA champion, Caron Butler. Caron, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time and your insights. When you hear players like Kyrie and Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley having these discussions, what are your thoughts on the things that they're talking about and whether they think playing or not playing is the right way to go about it?
First and foremost, thanks for having me on the show. And, you know, look, everybody's going to have different emotions, and you have to, one, respect their position. He's saying that for the first time in a long time, because all you usually get is a soundbite when guys talk about social injustices and things. They're just like, well, Kyrie don't want to play basketball. Dwight don't want to play basketball. People don't understand that for the first time in our lifetime, this is a great opportunity to continue the discussion and momentum and moving the needle. We've never had people from different walks of life, corporate, you know, be involved in social injustice like they have been involved to this extent. And we never had such a tragedy like what happened to Brother George Floyd in a representation of, you know, Steven Jackson and what he's doing. It hit our NBA family extremely hard. And as a fraternity, we're rallying around a real issue, and people are really trying to figure out what is the best way to lead and continue to influence and use their platform wisely. Is it playing basketball in Orlando and maximizing that space and that platform, which the commissioner I've spoken to on the NBA virtual roundtable, and he said, look, he welcomed guys, you know, social stance. He will assist and partner up with pushing the narrative so that discussion and momentum don't drop off. So it's just up to the player to feel, you know, comfortable with, one, being in the bubble, playing the game of basketball, and then continuing to exercise the right to push the needle and move the needle on the social stance.
So, and absolutely, you can see both sides of this. So, what would you do?
Honestly, in this position, I would still play the game of basketball because I know that that would be extremely therapeutic. I would want to complete the season, but I could easily say that because I'm retired and I just know what's more important to me at this state of my life. younger guys, you know, it's different, you know. And if I was in the fire and in the foxhole right now, I would lead by example and do the right thing, you know, for committee. So if I felt like our guys needed some leadership and they were just like, you know what, bro, we don't want to do it, Adam Silver has, you know, given them the right to look. You know, some guys may not want to go to the bubble, and we respect that position. And, you know, you will still get the support. Unfortunately, you know, that would not drive capital and revenue. And therefore, you know, that's something that you will sacrifice. And I would be willing to sacrifice capital in this standpoint. And I know a lot of other guys will be as well, because, you know, the social injustice is just, you know, just crazy in this country, has been for quite some time. And I think that guys are really willing and ready to sacrifice whatever it takes, you know, for the needle to be moved.
Caron Butler with us again, part of LeBron James' nonprofit geared towards fighting voter suppression called More Than a Vote, and certainly an incredible movement and cause there. And we've seen, as you mentioned, players rallying around this. You mentioned Adam Silver willing to be a partner. I know you were critical of James Dolan and his silence on a lot of this issue, but how much of this do you think now, especially for Kyrie, Dwight Howard, and the players in that group, is going to fall on the owners and what they're willing to publicly commit to as far as support?
A lot of it. You know, look, this is not the time to be politically correct for anyone. This is the time to stand on the right side of justice and acknowledge, you know, some of the things that have happened and gone, you know, undone and unaddressed in this country for, you know, centuries. And, you know, a lot of people was questioning, how did we get here? How did we get to this point? How did I not see this? And Kareem said it best. It's systemic racism, and it's also invisible racism that exists in this world. And it don't really... is not visible unless you shine a light on it. Now the world, not just the black and brown community, Latinx, but the world is shining a light on invisible racism, and it's very visible. So now when you look at, you know, corporate and the integration and what's happening up top, you know, a lot of things are brought to the table right now. And it's just, you know, impressive to see, you know, people trying to put their best foot forward and try to make the proper steps to, you know, just have some type of inclusion with the black and brown community and really have drive real change.
Caron Butler is with us this morning. So to those, you said you would play. To those who have said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? I would play, but it's easy for me to say that. Being 40 years old and understanding the platform and
sure.
How corporate adapt to it. So it's just, you know, it's an easy question for me, but I would not stop the momentum of my activism. I will always keep that pushing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's obviously the decision that Kyrie and these other people are trying to come to grips with. What kind of conversations would you have, not to convince somebody, but to sort of explain to those who are feeling that they don't want to play about why you feel it was important for you to play?
Well, you know, me personally, I just think that in order for us to really have change, you know, corporate and people that don't look like me has to be involved in the conversation, have to care. And, you know, when all the focus and attention goes to Orlando, you want to be in front of corporate. You want to be in front of as many eyeballs as possible and, you know, exercising your right to display all these things on the largest scale. You look at The Last Dance, how many eyeballs is on that? And you want to make sure that, look, every time we step on the court, it will be some representation of, you know, the movement and moving the needle and bringing social, you know, justice to our world, and always remembering and honoring the fallen, you know, that died tragically, that should be still be here with us today. But at the same time, if guys do not want to go in the bubble, if guys want to participate and be on the ground, being grassroots, leading these marches, using their platform, I cannot knock them, not one, not one time. I salute them, I rally around them, and I support them. It's all about what are you most comfortable with. And, you know, I support them because they're my brothers either way.
Well, Caron, we appreciate your time and insights this morning. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for what you're doing. And we appreciate all your efforts on many levels. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you as well. Thank you.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
Golic and Wingo, brought to you by Discover. Get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. It includes your FICO credit score and Checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you as we're all dealing with how sports are trying to come back in the middle of this pandemic and everything that's going on. We talked to Dr. Alan Sills, the chief NFL medical officer, earlier today about the plans that the NFL has in place. And he had said one thing that, you know, the virus will determine how we play and how all this stuff, we're all these things and we're trying to mitigate them. But at the end of the day, you know, the virus will dictate how things are going to be handled or not handled. Well, that's very interesting because baseball was shook a little bit when Dr. Anthony Fauci basically said, you know, I would try and wrap things up before too late in October because that's when the second wave of this thing may come back. And I had at least one baseball player tell me, yeah, that was a real wake-up call for everybody in that sport. And it got us to thinking about football. And football's not only played in September, but October, November, December, and January,
so,
outdoors.
So Dr. Fauci has now chimed in on football teams because he had mentioned the baseball not going into October. So Anthony Fauci says football teams would need to emulate plans by the NBA and MLS for a bubble format or consider not playing this season due to the coronavirus pandemic. Again, Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and a key member of the White House task force, told CNN that football players would need to be isolated from others and tested regularly. He said unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall. If there is a second wave, which is certainly a possibility, and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season, football may not happen this year.
That,
oh boy,
that is a Fauci bomb.
I'm going to say, and listen, it's the end of the show today. We can, at Golic and Wingo, you can tweet in your plan. I don't know where the hell you do 32 teams, 1,800 players in a bubble somewhere.
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas? Las Vegas?
Las Vegas.
Where do you have enough football fields?
Where do you have, where are they playing?
I mean, my God.
Everyone's got to play in the Roomba.
Oh, God. Okay. So again, we're looking for realistic things.
Yes. Las Vegas. I'm sure where there are other football fields in Vegas. You play the primetime matchup for every week in the Roomba, and the rest of them have to play at the outdoor fields that you can build in the vast desert that you've got there.
Again, we're looking for realistic things.
I'm giving you one.
Of the I realistically, Trey, I don't know where you can do it. I don't think you could do that.
What have we said all along that the NFL is not going to be able to emulate that bubble thing?
Or I don't
plan,
think so.
The plan has been for the NFL not to do that. I don't know. Look, this is Dr. Fauci saying what he believes.
Well, a lot of people, the doctors, talk about a second wave coming through at some point in the winter, which we all kind of have just been, oh, okay, but that would be a direct impact on football, which is in the meat of it right then, coming toward the end of the college football, but right in the meat of the NFL season.
And so in all seriousness, when you look at what would a bubble entail for the NFL, you're already going to be dealing with an environment that probably, if that's the case and that's a reality you're going to have to start to anticipate, is going to have to forsake that whole idea of fans and stands thing. Like, you got to let that one go if this is going to be the case, and the travel model isn't going to be viable in that. So if you remove all of that, the need for stands and all those things becomes a lot lesser. And if you could get to an area that had an abundance of fields, an abundance of space, and was going to be largely based out near the West Coast, that would be ideal in all of this because you would need weather that would hold for the most part through the course of that season. You would need a ton of space and a ton of places to put all of the bodies associated with NFL football teams. That is honestly why Vegas popped into my mind at first, is what place has the ability to house and facilitate all of the bodies that you would need for an NFL season? It is pretty much only Las Vegas and the amount of hotel rooms and spaces that they would have in that.
Again, the NFL has maintained that its plan is to start the regular season on schedule with that Thursday night game when the Chiefs host the Texans. We all know the off-season program and the draft is basically done remotely, but the plan is for training camps to be held in person starting in late July. So we've seen college football players start to matriculate back to some schools, and we've had some positive tests pop up, some more than others because they were only testing people that had symptoms at the University of Houston.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we had Lincoln Riley on today, and I said, Dr. Allen Sills, at the end of the day, you got to play football. You have to start the process. And Ravens head coach John Harbaugh has already chimed in saying,
the virus limitations we have now are basically humanly impossible.
Let me just say, if they can't play the way they want to play and everybody's home, it's not going to happen. Because I don't think a bubble is going to happen. I mean, you're talking 53 players on a roster. They're going to expand them from practice squad more. So even go up to 65 or so. Throw coaches in there, you're at 80. All other personnel, you're at least 100 people per team at 32 teams. That's over 3,200 people. The NBA right now at 37 a team is about 1,100 people. So you're tripling that for an entire city. There's no way a bubble can happen.
I'm just telling you this. With the NFL, I can at least see with the resources, time, and ability they have as a professional organization dealing with only 32 teams in that, I can say, you know what? I can invent a way, and I'm sure they would exhaust every option of looking into how that's possible. College football would be dead where it stands.
Oh, yeah.
College football.
Question.
I mean, there wouldn't be a prayer that this could happen. And the issue is with all of this, and what Dr. Fauci has pointed out, is you have to deal with the surrounding environments into every place you travel in. Because, yeah, when you travel a team into town, you can hold them up in the hotel, control what comes in and out, all those things, but you can't control who everyone else on that other team has interacted with while they're in their homes, while they're in their area. And those variables, I have a feeling, would be the issue. I mean, college football would be dead where it stands.
Completely agree with that.
And if that's the case, college athletics across the board,
more than likely,
would be in a ton of trouble.
Oh boy, Dr. Fauci.
On that one. So we'll see what happens and see what happens going forward. And that one, have a lot more conversation on that tomorrow, I would imagine, on Friday's edition of Golic and Wingo.
We'll get an answer on a Beethoven with Black.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yes.
For Alvin Kamara.
As well as a St. Bernard. Plus, we'll have Florida State head coach Mike Norvell, Sue Bird, L. Duncan, and Mike Tirico. Plus, we'll play That Bites and Love It or Shove It. We got a lot of the show.
We got a lot to do.
We'll see you on Friday, we believe.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.